I know Brett Kavanaugh. Actually, I worked with him for a couple of years on the Whitewater investigation.
I felt it was my duty to weigh the credibility of the witness. And I've put 5-year-olds on the witness stand.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hello, and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case, Worst Case Scenario. I'm your host, former state and federal prosecutor Francie Hakes, and everyone will be so excited to know I'm joined by...
Jim Clemente, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor and writer-producer on CBS's Criminal Minds.
You know, Jim, it's interesting. We've had a couple of weeks where you did an independent interview without me. And then last week, as we had discussed, I talked about protecting children without you. I have to say, I hate to say it, but I think we've had way more comments with people saying, where's Jim versus where's Francie? Where are the hashtag Team Francie people?
They're probably just quietly sitting back knowing that Francie will return.
Well, we are back. And I'm excited today because I want to talk about something ripped from the headlines. You and I have certainly done that occasionally. And I was just on the news talking about this case. It is ripped from the headlines. And it's all about the allegations against D.C. Circuit Court Judge Brett Kavanaugh.
Obviously, who is pending confirmation to the United States Supreme Court.
That's right. Big job, lifetime appointment. He was appointed by President Trump.
Yeah, but he's already got a lifetime appointment to the D.C. Circuit Court, right?
He does. And people seem to miss that in some of the debate. So this, obviously, there are lots of politics involved in this. You've got Democrats on one side, Republicans on the other. And what I'm hoping we can do today, Jim, is talk about it from an investigative and prosecutor standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, full disclosure, though, I know Brett Kavanaugh. Actually, I worked with him for a couple of years on the Whitewater investigation under Ken Starr. And so you just said something to the Democrats versus Republicans. Well, I don't consider myself a Democrat, though I have some very liberal views, but I also have some very conservative views. And so I don't fit very well into one of those peg holes. So, but
Jim, I think we can all agree you're a round hole on a square peg. Yes.
Could be. But the fact is that on this particular point, I mean, certainly I may disagree with Brett Kavanaugh's stance on, I don't know, the Second Amendment, let's say, or I don't know what other things they've talked about.
They've mostly talked about the Second Amendment and abortion as it comes to Brett Kavanaugh. And, you know, they say that at least the opposition says that he is going to take the country back to a place where women have no rights, that kind of thing.
Okay. And what about gay rights and other human rights?
I don't think he has opined on that. You know, it's one of those things in these confirmation hearings. It's like a circus.
It's what they want to say.
It's what they want to say, which is basically, oh, if that's an issue that's going to come before me, I can't opine about it.
Right. Well, anyway, the point is that I worked very closely with Brett for a number of years back in, I believe, 1995, 96. And I have to say, he was obviously very bright, did not know at the time where he went to school. Turns out it was Yale. And I did not know that he was destined to become a United States Court of Appeals justice or to be in line for appointment to the United States Supreme Court. But I did know a couple of things about him, that he was very careful and analytical, very bright, and very honest. We were doing an investigation against the President of the United States, Bill Clinton, and he was extremely careful not to let the fact that this was sort of a newsworthy investigation influence him in any way, shape, or form. And he was very careful about making sure that the law supported every move we made. So I found him to have a high degree of integrity. Even if I disagree with his views in some cases, I have to say that I am happy that if somebody is going to be in the United States Supreme Court with those differing views from me, that it's somebody with the level of integrity as Brett Kavanaugh has.
Well, that's interesting that you say that, Jim. Obviously, well said. The one thing I found, before we get into the allegations, the thing that I found, I don't know Brett Kavanaugh. I've never heard anything about the man at all until he was nominated by President Trump. What I found incredible, and I admired about him during the hearings, was his obvious, incredible knowledge base about case law and the Constitution. I mean, if you really watch those hearings, which I did because I'm a junkie, I always watch hearings about these Supreme Court justices on both sides of the aisle. I was stunned as he was pulling out case after case, not just talking about the cases, but quoting not just from the opinions, but from the dissents.
Right, from memory.
From memory.
Right, that was pretty amazing. Yeah. But on top of that, there's two things that I want to point out about his hearings, but his acceptance speech. And that was the high regard he showed for his mother, the judge, who was his idol, and for his wife and two daughters. And it's very obvious when you see him interacting with his family that he has a tremendous amount of love and respect for those women. That's why I think this particular allegation cuts really hard in this case. So I'm happy we got a chance to discuss it.
Yeah, so let's get into it. I mean, it's a really interesting allegation. And I've handled a lot of cases where there's been an allegation of sexual abuse or assault, and there's no DNA, there's no physical evidence, there's no eyewitnesses. And so it boils down to a he said, she said kind of allegation. And as a prosecutor, I felt it was my duty to weigh the credibility of the witness. And I've put 5-year-olds on the witness stand.
Mm-hmm.
I had to weigh that child's credibility just like I had to weigh the adult rape victim's credibility. And there's really only two ways to do that, Jim. One, assess the allegation itself. What is the allegation? What are the facts? What are the details? Does it sound like a credible account of sexual assault or abuse? And two, does the alleged victim have any motive to lie? Because as you've seen in court, Jim, as I have, every defense attorney worth his or her salt is going to claim that that alleged victim has a motive to lie, to fabricate the account.
Right.
And so let's get into that a little bit and how we go about doing that.
Okay. But I do want to say one other thing, though. You said he said, she said. In this case, what we basically have, she said. We don't really have the he said, because he has not made any statement about this alleged incident. He's said that it didn't happen. He can't say that because he wasn't given a date, time, and place to respond to. He basically hasn't said on that date, time, and place, I was here, there, or somewhere else, which is why there is a statute of limitations. Now, we've talked about it before. I mean, in certain cases, there shouldn't be, or the statute of limitations should be extended when a child is not likely to report for 20 or 30 years after a child's sex crime occurs, then that statute of limitations should take that into account. However, because of the time that passes, evidence goes away, witnesses go away, memories fade. Memories can be malleable. So I wonder, and I hope we get to talk a little bit about the circumstances surrounding this memory on the part of the accuser.
Yeah, so let's sort of break it down as we would have done, you as the investigator and the prosecutor, me as the prosecutor, when we were assessing a case. Here are the facts, at least as far as we know them, to have been alleged by Dr. Ford. She said in a letter, we've obviously not heard from her ourselves, so you and I can't assess her credibility in her statements or her mannerisms. But in a letter, she has said that on a date she doesn't remember, at a place she doesn't remember how she got there or left there, She was at a party and had been drinking herself. She was 15. And 17-year-old Brett Kavanaugh, accompanied by a friend, pushed her into a room. And Brett Kavanaugh...
Wait, you said pushed. Because I heard they said, come on in here.
Well, I think I read the letter, and I think it said they corralled her. I think literally it said something like they corralled her into the room.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's important. What does corralled mean?
Yeah.
Does it mean that the two persons stood in one way and she walked in? Or does it mean they grabbed her and physically threw her in the room?
Right. Well, we don't know because right. she won't elaborate. But it certainly left the impression with me that she was indicating it wasn't her volition to enter the room. So she was indicating that the violence, if you will, started there, that she was into the room.
I don't agree. I don't think the word corralled. And I'm sure that her attorney had something to do with getting this letter to where it got. And I'm sure that that word that was chosen was very carefully chosen.
Well, it probably was. And that's just that really proves our point from the beginning, Jim, is that we need to hear her account in her own words.
Right. But corralled has no violence in it. Corralled is when you corral a herd. You don't beat them. You don't physically take them. You basically run around or ride around the edge and sort of nudge or encourage somebody to go a particular way. So
I think what you're saying is we really can't evaluate what she meant.
No, but I don't want to, like I've seen in some press reports, take words and then add something that's not there.
No, true.
So I do not believe that the word corralled indicates violence.
I disagree.
Okay,
I thought differently. I think I thought differently only because of how the account then goes forward, which is that then she is tossed down, I think, on the bed, and Brett Kavanaugh is on top of her, and she says he is trying to attack her and trying to...
She used those words,
yes,
trying to attack.
That is the exact words in the letter. Trying to attack her and trying to take off her bathing suit and some other clothes she had on top of her bathing suit.
Okay, so, all right. That's important to know. Mm-hmm. So she had two layers of clothes on.
She did.
It wasn't underwear and clothes on top. It was a bathing suit and clothes on top.
Correct, according to her account, yes.
Okay.
And she says there was another person in there, a man named Mike Judge, who, by the way, has come forward and said he doesn't remember anything. He doesn't remember this event happening and said he's never seen Brett Kavanaugh act in that way that she describes toward any woman. So he just issued what is basically a blanket denial. I didn't see it happen.
Right. But that's not a blanket denial, because if he said, I don't remember it, period, that's a blanket denial. Or if he said, it didn't happen, that's a blanket denial. But he also added that he's never seen Brett Kavanaugh act that way towards a woman.
Yes, he said all three of those things that you just said, by the way.
So that's good. I mean, that's more than just a blanket denial. He also went further and said, I have experience with Brett Kavanaugh, and I've never seen him act that way.
Yeah, so I guess at this point in her account, we've got a she said, they said difference.
Correct.
So, which is interesting. And can I just say as an aside, Jim, I didn't get a chance to say this on Fox News tonight when I was doing the interview about this, but to me, there is a really interesting point here. All the people who are accusing Dr. Ford of lying or fabricating the account are missing something that I think is significant. It's small, but significant. And that is, in a fabricated account, would you expect someone to invent an eyewitness who would be expected to simply deny wrongdoing? I find that to mitigate against it being a completely fabricated account, because who fabricates an eyewitness?
Well, but who also acts in concert with malignant intent. I agree with what you're saying, that she probably didn't fabricate it, but if it did happen, why would one of these guys act in such a manner with an eyewitness there who could stop it?
Yes. Also,
or report it.
Yes. And who apparently did stop it, at least according to Dr. Ford's account. This Mike Judge at one point sort of piled on top of Brett Kavanaugh, who was on top of her. Again, this is her allegation. And that caused the pile to tumble, in her words. And she was able then to get off the bed and escape the room.
And I wonder, could it be that that was sort of horsing around? I mean, that sounds like horsing around.
It does to me.
And I also read something about Mr. Judge, that something about his sexuality that he's questioning.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah. And is it possible that he was in the room to be with Brett and Brett was in the room to be with her and it got kind of crazy?
I don't know. I mean, that's the problem, of course, is that we can't properly assess this. One other possible detail that she told is that during the time when she alleges that Kavanaugh was on top of her, the music was turned up loudly to prevent her screams from being heard, she says, and Kavanaugh put his hand over her mouth.
Okay, well, that's interesting, because how many hands does he have? Okay, two. And how is he turning up the music and putting his hand over her mouth?
And trying to remove her clothes.
And try, yeah, that's kind of an internal inconsistency. And what does that tell you?
It may not be true.
Or accurate.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
So there are three ways to look at this: whether it happened at all, whether it happened as reported, or whether it was misinterpreted. And one thing that stands out to me, Francie, is what's not here. There seemingly was no words exchanged after the "come on in here," if there those were words. I don't know. So what we're left with is trying to interpret her version of behavioral events. And we know that people can misinterpret events. And in certain cases, that's very relevant legally. In other cases, it can totally obviate any crime at all.
Well, yes, I mean, it's a legal principle in prosecution for the defense side to put forward a legal defense of mistake. And so the prosecution always has to be prepared to prove that whatever the criminal act was not committed by mistake. Right. So you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a critical piece.
Right. So one of the problems of not knowing when the party was or where the party was or who else was at the party was that we don't know what happened in her mind before that. In other words, I've heard that there were very specific details, like she was walking up the stairs and she was three steps from the top and there's this little landing and she wanted to go to the bathroom and they told her to come in here. And her lawyer apparently reported that she had had two drinks. We don't know what those drinks were. Were they beers or were they Long Island iced teas? Two of which should put any 15-year-old in a really bad way.
Yes.
So I don't know what it was. And she may or may not know what those drinks were. But the fact was that she was obviously engaging in underage drinking. And obviously that's a risk factor. It can also affect memory. It could also affect perception. And so even though she may have remembered this event happening, If that's the case, she may have misinterpreted behavior or misremembered behavior. Now, I know that there was some report that she recalled this or first spoke about it 6 years ago.
Yes, 2012 was the first time that she ever spoke about this event at all, was when she was in, as I understand it, couples therapy with her husband. And she mentioned to the therapist that she was the victim of an attempted assault of some kind. And the therapist wrote down that she was assaulted by four boys. Oh. Now, she says through her lawyer, this is so frustrating because we don't know what she says, but she says through her lawyer that the therapist notes are incorrect. So she's using the therapist's notes to bolster her tale that she disclosed this about Brett Kavanaugh without ever mentioning his name 6 years ago, but also says the therapist's notes are unreliable because they contain a key mistake.
Okay. However, as we know, Francie, that's a contemporaneous recording of an event, and the event being the statement that she was assaulted by four boys.
Right.
But even her statement today, isn't she saying that, quote, nothing happened because she was able to get away?
Well,
he was trying to do A, B, and C.
Yes, but she has also said, again, through her lawyer, that she believes that had he, Kavanaugh, not been so drunk, she would have been raped.
Well, wait a minute.
I know.
All right. Her belief
that
that was the case is almost irrelevant. Because it didn't happen.
Correct.
And she's not saying, I mean, this is like the classic, were it not a size time, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and anybody who went to law school should know that reference. I'm sorry, I don't even remember the case, but Brett Kavanaugh probably does.
I'm sure he does.
Yes. It's a conditional threat. Mm-hmm. And it's basically, it's not a threat because there's an outside condition to it.
Right.
And she, in her statement then, is saying Brett Kavanaugh was drunk.
Yes.
So drunk
that
he couldn't rape her. So it wouldn't have been a possibility. But the fact is that unless she says that she can describe with credibility something that indicates that he was actually trying to rape her, she's got no place saying, I believe that if this wasn't the case, but it was the case, he would have done this, but he didn't. I mean,
no. Well, that's why it's so hard to assess the credibility and I sort of lean one way. And where I wish we had time to get our friend Jim Fitzgerald in here to talk about sort of statement analysis, kind of, and Stan Burke to talk about statement analysis, because to me, it's very significant the words that she uses. He tried to attack me. He tried to remove my clothes. That is a long leap, Jim, you and I know, from there to actual rape.
But wait a minute. There's no stated intention to rape. Just because, I mean, as she describes it, people in high school make out in that position. They, you know, do heavy petting in that position. Rape is an extreme that I can't believe that she's actually alleging in this case. It's just, wait a minute. Where is the stated intention? Where is, whether either behaviorally or verbally, to rape? Would he really try to rape her in front of this other guy?
Well, and that's
to leave a witness?
That's the thing that makes it incredible, in my opinion, this allegation, because she's gone that far, because she leaps in where she can't possibly know she should land.
I just don't understand whether or not that kind of characterization of what might have happened had these circumstances been different, I don't know where that came from. Did that come from outside sources who are influencing her, or did it come from her and this clearly partial memory? You know, we know that one of the worst types of evidence that can ever be put in a court of law is eyewitness testimony.
Yes, agreed.
And that is for a number of reasons. One, our observations are malleable. What we see and what we think we see may not be actually the same thing. And what we experience and what we think we experience 35, 36 years later, our memories can change. I mean, I was alive at that time.
As was I.
Right. And I can remember, let's say, going to my prom. And I was upset that night. Something happened that upset me. And it stays with me. I remember the girl I went with. I remember her name. I remember that she was wearing a blue dress because I've seen pictures of me with an afro and standing next to Mary with the blue dress on. So I have some anchors to bring me back there. But I have no idea what the theme song was. I have no idea where the prom was located. I have no idea when I picked her up, how I picked her up, where we got dropped off, when we got home. I don't remember any of those details. Because why? Because it was over 35 years ago.
I think, Jim, one of the things that I've seen, I'm getting some Twitter hate tonight after my appearance on Fox talking about this, even though I in no way, shape, or form called Dr. Ford a liar. People are just assuming I did because I said I probably wouldn't bring this case. But one of the things people ask, traumatic memories of traumatic events like a crime, let's assume it's a crime. In her mind, it was a crime against her, a violent assault, she says, are different than just a memory of a prom or something disappointing happening. So how do you explain to people the difference between a traumatic memory that may stand out in your mind because it was a traumatic event?
Right. Well, I am saying this was a traumatic memory. I have this memory because Mary ended up leaving the prom without me. And it was my prom. And I was very upset. And so even though it wasn't a crime that was committed against me, I remember it because of that. Now, I know that I went to the junior prom. I know that I went to proms in college. I don't even remember them. I don't even have a memory at all of them. And I'm sorry, but I can't remember who I went to those dances with. But they were significant events in the life of a teenager in high school. And I don't remember them. So I do agree that traumatic events can firmly plant a memory in your mind, but that does not insulate it against manipulation. Your brain and your memory is an organic thing. It is not solid state, permanent memory. Every time we recall a memory, we have the opportunity to adjust it. We have the opportunity to use information and education that we've had since that memory to color what happened in that memory. And it's very difficult to strip that added information, that added intelligence, that added experience away from a memory that existed 3.5 decades ago. So what I'm trying to say is, I agree that trauma can plant the seeds of a memory that can be recalled later. But that doesn't make the memory exact. It doesn't make the memory perfect. And it certainly doesn't make the memory absolutely right.
So trauma doesn't equal necessarily perfect recall.
No, it does help recall. But nobody can get away from the fact that their memory can be manipulated.
So as prosecutors, we would assess her statement, such as it is. And I just want to say again, I know we've said this already, but I just want to say again, without watching her, I never, ever, ever put an alleged victim on the witness stand without talking to them first, without visiting them in their home if they were children, without having them in my office to make sure I understood what they were saying and that I personally believed their credibility. So Jim and I cannot assess her credibility.
Not at this point. We're not talking about assessing her credibility, but we're looking at other factors that we do have at this point. And we'll come back and talk about once she does testify, if she does, we'll absolutely come back and talk about that. However, the problem is she's not going to be cross-examined.
No, and not by us.
No, not by anybody. She's going to be in a public hearing, and it's going to be, there are going to be people who are basically promoting what she's saying, and there are going to be people who are fighting what she's saying, but she will not be cross-examined as if this were a court of law. No. She has, by the way, made a statement through her lawyer that she refuses to, quote, testify in this hearing until the FBI investigates the case. Sorry, The FBI does not investigate those kinds of cases.
Well, then that's what that was my next point, Jim. You're always jumping ahead of me, Jim.
Well, I'm actually doing what I should be doing. You are just way too slow.
Way too slow.
Yes.
Everybody, can you believe Jim? I guess this is what happens when I don't sit with Jim long enough. I got to get him back in line. All right, I'll do my best. I'm going to get that picture of him with the afro and Mary in the blue dress if I can. And that'll put him right back in his place. So,
kind of like that hairdo.
I bet you do. Well, Jim, obviously, we have a lot more to talk about with respect to Dr. Ford and her allegation against Supreme Court nominee Judge Brett Kavanaugh. So this is very much to be continued. So until next time on Best Case, Worst Case, thanks for listening.
Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production. Produced by Jim Clementi at Empire Studios, LA. Engineered and edited by Mike Thal. Music composed and performed by Simba Tsumba. And hosted by Wondery.
You can listen to Best Case, Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you want to do something about child sexual abuse, Darkness Delight can help. Did you know that more than 90% of the time children are sexually abused by someone they know?
Jim, this isn't about stranger danger. It's about learning the true risks. Darkness to Light's training can help prevent, recognize, and react to child sexual abuse in your community.
When you make the decision to get involved, kids can be protected. It starts with you.
Visit www.d2l.org to take the training and learn more.
That's d2l.org.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.